Yo, what's the deal, baby? This your boy, Uncle Luke, formerly of the 2 Live Crew. You are listening to Pass It Down with Mike Silver and Natalie Silver. Natalie is the most beautiful young lady in this deal right here. Mike doesn't look so good, even though they're dad and daughter. It's the big show, baby.
Very excited, but also it is bittersweet to have my old friend Steve Kepman here with us, Natalie. He's a longtime journalist, great writer and reporter who has a new book out. But unfortunately, the book coincides with the passing of his very, very close friend and someone who's a giant in our business, Pedro Gomez. And Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's still surreal. We both have this incredible book here, Remember Who You Are, and it is an incredible collection of, yeah, there it is, remembrances and essays and heartfelt, really just, you know, just stories and philosophical musings about the life of a great man. But
it's kind of crazy how fast you got this out. So Pedro passed away, was that 5 months ago?
Super Sunday, February 7th.
Unexpectedly, yeah. And we have 62 essays in here, which is crazy. I saw this book and I thought that, well, I don't know if the people can see the width, but I thought that the essays would be long and fewer, but there are so many essays. They're all short. And can you just walk us through the past 5 months and just what's been happening since then?
Well, the really crazy part was I had embarked on an insane mission around the time of the elections, which was to bring together a book of essays that would help process what we were all going through back then. It was called Now What? The Voters Have Spoken, Essays on Life After Trump. And I actually had kind of an insane group of contributors for that one. I mean, I had like Rosanna Arquette, Keith Olbermann, Anthony Scaramucci, Congressman Denver Riggleman, Jacob Heilbrun, the editor of the National Interest, and just this loaded lineup. I mean, Meacham, one of my favorite writers, blurbed us and stuff. And, I was on C-SPAN, all of that. And so I was completely fried from having stayed up working like after midnight and getting up at 5 for a few months, and then was actually going on the taping of the thing that was on C-SPAN was like 2 days after Pedro died. Oh. So I kind of shut down, appearances and podcasts and whatnot on that. But I also was so revved up, it was like, Madison Bumgarner, when he came in, he pitched a game in the World Series as a starter. And then it was like, can you go, Bum, for 2 innings of relief or whatever? It's like, I don't know, but give me the ball and I'll go out. I mean, from a personal level. It was already insane. And then it was a thing where the energy of other people just really fueled the project. Because I had incredible responses from people. I'll give an example. We can talk sports. We can talk politics. I write about both things. And I've done 2 books with Terry McAuliffe, who's been governor of Virginia once and will probably be again real soon. But through him, I know Paul Begala, who helped get Bill Clinton elected. And I mean, it's not like we're great buddies, but we've been to lunch, we talk. And so I connected them, and Pedro and Begala developed this like texting relationship, and they did meet, but they both loved it. They loved sharing ideas with each other. And I called up Paul to ask if he might do an essay for the book. And, I was happy to get through to Paul, even though I consider him a friend. And when I told him what I had in mind, in like 4 seconds, he got it. He knew what I wanted to do. And his reaction was, I am honored. I am so honored that you would ask me. And you know what? I talked to Paul again a week ago, and he's seen the book. He loves it. But he was saying the same thing, that he was honored. And that's the point I want to make about the project is Pedro and I were great friends for 25 years. And Pedro had a lot of people who were great friends of his, a lot of people who wanted to do right by this project. So Brad Mangin, for example, the amazing photographer, decided to be picture editor, threw himself into that work insanely. And we went from what I think would have been a really cool book that was all about the words to a really cool book where you have like Michael Zagaris's Rolling Stones pictures.
You're right.
Yeah.
Which Pedro loved. I'm talking to you from the Small Writers Retreat Center that my wife and I run in SoCal, the Wellstone Center in the Redwoods. Oh, nice. And Pedro and I celebrated our 50th birthday party here jointly. You know, we had whatever, 100 odd. It was a pretty good party.
There's a picture in here, isn't there?
yeah, there's a picture in there from that. And late that night, Zagaris kind of handed over a couple of little things to me and Pedro. And one of them was a Stones picture for Pedro. And when he unwrapped that and looked at it, I mean, he almost had to sit down. He was so moved. And so I know that because I was there for that moment. I know about Michael Zagaris, that he was there the night Bobby Kennedy got shot at the Ambassador Hotel, that he is maybe the greatest storyteller, you know, on earth right now. I mean, in terms of sitting down with a man, you've had him on the podcast.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We had to do two episodes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And we could have
kept going forever. Exactly.
Yeah.
Of course you could have. Yeah. And so having Z and that kind of magic, you know, and then getting the pictures, that was the thing that was so cool about the project. Because we took, you know, some really great essays that people, you know, wrote for us. A lot of it was really hard for them, you know, hard for people like Howard Bryant, for example. You know, his essay Speechless, that was kind of literally true. He really felt that it was like, if you need me, I'll be there, but I'd really rather not do this, was the bottom line. And so I had to kind of feel like, did I have something special here that was coming together? Because I better not ask Howard Bryant to do that unless I think I have something special. And, you know, I think I have something special here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, first of all, just reading these essays, I mean, you know, it's making me very sad, but, you know, it's reminding me how unbelievably, you know, authentic Pedro was and how effortless that seemed. Just that, you know, this guy took over a room, but it never seemed in any way contrived.
I mean, I didn't even know he existed until I heard that he died. And then reading this, I love the guy. I feel like I know him. I was actually nervous to read it because I thought that it would be really sad and that it would make me really just like down and emotional, but it is sad, but it also, like, I couldn't put it down because the stories that people were telling, it was just so entertaining and uplifting. And it just made me fall in love with the guy.
And it's not bullshit. I mean, he really, you know, Steve, I just thought the way that he went through life, you know, you obviously had moments with him that are much more personal and, you know, private to you guys, but just the way that he conducted himself day to day, it just seemed effortless. There was nothing close to contrived about it. And I thought what Tim Kuhn wrote was so great, talking about how we live in this society of packaged, you know, fake authenticity, and that here's this guy who just exuded it and demanded it. I know you knew that already, but that had to be a cool recurring theme throughout this book.
Absolutely. I mean, it was funny when he and I covered the Oakland A's in the 90s as competitors, you know, ostensibly. He was Sacramento Bee, I was San Francisco Chronicle. And we had a big crew then, you know, six traveling writers. This was before social media, so we could at least sort of watch the game, you know. And there was so much back and forth that he was in the middle of, but it rubbed off on everyone, where everyone just insulted everybody. And, you know, if you couldn't handle that, then, you know, just get out. And you know what? I was a great friend of his. But the way that he was with me was the way that he was with you, was the way that he was with most of the contributors in the book. You know, that was the cool thing about it. There was, even in doing his work and dealing with, a major league manager, he was the same guy. And, I don't think that was maybe always true in his life, but by the time that I knew him in the 90s, he developed confidence that he knew he could do the job and he could relax and celebrate the fact that in his view, he had the most amazing job in the world. He loved what he was doing and he loved the people, but he loved the way that baseball brought out different sides of the people. He loved the whole package.
Just having done books and most of my books I've had to do really, really fast, which sucks, as you know, and I know how fast they can go, but this is still extraordinary. I mean, you're February 7th, you're reeling from the news. We're in the middle of a pandemic. For you to conceive of it, strike the deal, land Brad Magid for the photos, contact everyone and get the essays in motion, write some of it yourself, which I'm sure was not an easy, thing because it's so close to you. Are you amazed by how quickly this is out?
Well, the funny thing, the perverse thing is I thought of trying to get it out even faster. So this for me was a little bit slow.
Wow.
Because I did most of the work in the first 2 months, maybe, but I wanted the essays to have a certain quality of in the fires of the initial wave of emotion. And, they didn't all have to be that way, but I wanted that quality. And I was so lucky because, like you mentioned, Tim Kuhn. I mean, Tim doesn't mind if I say this, but we kind of went back and forth. I mean, we were on the Chronicle staff together, and he knows I love his writing. More importantly, he knows Pedro loved his writing.
Yeah.
And so he just had to be in the book. There wasn't two ways about it.
Yeah.
He kept telling me, "Well, I don't really know if I have anything eloquent to add." And we kind of went back and forth, and then he sends in this essay, which I felt like, Bezos in my chair getting just blasted off.
Right.
From the first line of like, my God, this guy can write. And how beautiful, how true, how right on. I got like Dave Scheinen, who I knew he was going to write a great essay.
Yeah.
And I knew what he would write about. But it was just, when he got to the end, he kind of switched into another gear. And it's like, I'm not going to quote it accurately, but he's sitting at his piano and it's like his hands are stoned. He can't play a note. He's, tearing up. It's just, man, if that doesn't get something going and the emotions, then nothing's happening. Because that, for me, that was just, yeah.
I feel like that's why one of the reasons it was so fun to read, because at first I was like, is Steve ghostwriting this? But then I remembered, these are all professional writers.
A lot of them.
Yeah. A lot of them. Yeah. And even the ones who weren't, it's all really exciting and really fun to read, even though it's sad.
Yeah. By the way, I was telling Natalie earlier, when I got my first job, my first real job at the Sacramento Union, the late, not so great Sacramento Union, where Mike Fleiss had already blazed a trail. And the job opened because a temporary job had ended and they had not rehired Tim Kuhn from the temporary position. So that's how I first heard his name. Like, oh, that we had this guy, Tim Kuhn, but now he's gone. And then he resurfaced at the B, about a month later. And I'm pretty arrogant and think I'm good. And I read a couple of his things and I was like, they got rid of this guy for me. Like, what the hell? What are they doing? This guy's amazing. So, yeah, I mean, I'm glad you got him. And then, yeah, just the, just the music themed ones alone between Zagaris and Dave Scheinen, as you talked about, and
Jack Curry.
Yeah, Jack Curry. I mean, just incredible. Pedro giving play by play from, you know, from Cure concerts overseas. I mean, just that in and of itself was an incredible.
I love the detail about how the videos were stable and he knew that Pedro was resisting the urge to dance just so he could send a good video. It's like,
yeah, as Sandy Gomez will tell you, Pedro didn't always love dancing, you know, despite the fact that he came from Miami.
Really?
So he might have been happy to have that video to shoot in some of those instances, actually.
Yeah, right. Gave him an excuse. You know, it kind of, like, for me, you know, coming up in that era and remembering what it was like when we would all go out on the road and the writers and, you know, beat writers and the columnists and that, you know, how tight those bonds were. And like, as you said, we all had to watch games and crack jokes. We couldn't just tweet or play with our phones. And, you know, it made me realize like that I'm a little more detached from that than I want to be, you know, as the years have gone on and I've, you know, not been anchored to one beat. And I still, you know, I still think I have good conversations with journalists and young journalists, but, you know, maybe not so much of that vibe. And it just strikes me that Pedro seemed to carry that, you know, he went national. He's a big TV star. He's at ESPN. He's all over the place. He's a very involved family man with, you know, with kids doing stuff. And yet he seemed to like, to me, he's like the string that kind of connects those days to where we are now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you went to the winter meetings with him, it wasn't like the old days, but I mean, I remember being in San Diego for the winter meetings, not that long ago with him. And, you know, we were out there, you know, Theo Epstein coming by, stopping by for a beer and that kind of stuff. And that when we had been on the beat, I had been the Berkeley guy. You and I, of course, both Daily Cal, you know, products. And that's right. And, you know, and I was on the hockey beat where I didn't even want to be a sports writer. I wanted to be off, you know, writing about the, you know, the changes in Europe and this kind of thing, which, of course, ultimately I did do. But the Chronicle kept giving me really cool jobs. So I took them, you know, hockey, then baseball. But I was not like, I kind of held myself aloof in a way. And so Pedro got one look at me and it's like, who do you think you are? Pretentious Berkeley guy. Are you kidding me? Angst, a lot of angst. Is that a German name? You know, just on and on. And, you know, he just kind of shot through all of this whole layer of stuff and we became great friends. And that was so cool about Pedro. He was always good at getting people to show who they were, you know, yeah, to cut through the bullshit and just be there in the moment. And it did transcend as well, you know, roles. One essay in the book is from Serena Morales, who, first of all, Brad worked with her to get some awesome pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you love that?
Yeah, I'm very excited by those photos.
Yeah, growing up in the Bronx, playing baseball. She's the Latina, and she, you know, sees Pedro on the TV one day, and it's like, wow, I could do that. And then, you know, she got to meet him. She writes about how they say you never meet your idol because you'll be disappointed, and how she wasn't disappointed. And ultimately, she ended up anchoring SportsCenter, and, you know, but her essay is beautiful. And these stories of younger people that he was able to bring some of that just love of talking and breaking through everything, you know, no matter what it was.
Yeah, I remember when you know, you first reached out to me and I suggested Serena because I didn't know. Like, I knew Serena. I'd gotten to know her because she was working for the Rams and we were out together. By the way, she's, you know, very diminutive person. She's drinking Macallan scotch and, you know, putting people under the table. But, you know, I was really impressed by her. But when I saw how she reacted, you know, when Pedro passed away, I just was like, oh my, you know, this was, I just didn't know. So classic Pedro, he was friends with, you know, all sorts of interconnected people who didn't realize they were all friends with him. But yeah, so we just have to talk about the Daily Cal for a second.
Yeah, I do want
to. Because I didn't, my freshman year, I went to Cal in 83, 84. And I was like, I'd written in high school and stuff. And I'm like, I'm just going to drink as much as I can freshman year and try to, you know, enjoy college and just not put anything on myself other than school. So I would read the Daily Cal and I was like, holy shit, I can't write for, they're too good. Like they were, you guys were like, you know, in retrospect, looking back, our run at the Daily Cal was exceptional, but I didn't know. I just thought that's what college journalism was. Like, I can't do, but you know, you had you and Pete Danko, who was like, you know, writing some of the best stuff I've ever seen. And
of course,
you know,
Fleiss
was there, a whole other topic. And, you know, I just, when I finally joined, I just remember being like, man, I better not suck. But of course I did, because like my, you know, I think my first lead was like, there was good news and bad news for the Bears or something, but
not as bad, by the way, as the Daily Clog, which I wrote for. I didn't really realize what I was signing up for, but that's like the online blog.
Yeah.
They don't let you use first person singular. So it's always like, we believe,
but you made
we think, yeah, you of course fun. That was the only way to do it.
So there's a famous story that I don't know if I've ever asked you about, but it's part of the Mike Fleiss lore.
And we've actually told it on this podcast. So yeah, okay. Our listeners will have to hear it again.
Does it involve Cleveland?
Yeah, you were sent to, why don't you tell the story? I think you could handle it well.
Well, so I'm actually going to see T.A. Tobias, who swam for Cal on that team and happens to know Pedro. I'm going to see him tomorrow. I have an event in Scottsdale for the book.
Wow.
Yeah. My first time, I mean, as of now, I've reported from like 40, 45 countries for a wide range of publications. My first time I ever traveled as a reporter was to go to Cleveland for the NC2A Swim Championships for the Daily Cal. I was pretty excited. Got there and Matt Biondi, my guy, who no one had heard of, no one.
Right.
6'6" with this big giant stroke where it was like he churned so much water. It was like he was emptying the pool.
He was my year. He was a freshman.
Yeah. He showed up and dominated the meet, you know? So I had a great story. You know, I filed my first story and I guess the way it worked then is we dictated
staff. Yeah. It to the night staff guy.
So I think it was like an 8-inch story. And I think that Fleiss edited, it inserted between 17 and 19 typos.
weren't all of them, didn't he spell Florida many times, like F-L-O-R-D-I-A?
Florida.
I'd actually forgotten that, but that sounds correct.
So now, Leitz, just so you understand. So back then, first of all, once it appears, that's what it is. Obviously, yeah. You can't edit it. And secondly, it was hard to get published. And so
I get it.
If you worked for a college paper, that was that was a clip. Like that was going to help Steve get jobs. Like, look, they sent me to Cleveland and I wrote this great story about this breakout star who's going to end up going to the Olympics and being on the U.S. water polo team, Matt Biondi. And, you know, look, it looks so cool. I was at the Olympics. So it's a big deal that the clip be clean. Yes. And Fleiss, unfortunately, he was the night staff guy, was not so big on attention to detail.
No. There were other factors as well.
Legend has it that there may have been substances involved that, you know, are a little bit more, are a little bit stronger than maybe stuff that's even legal now.
Exactly.
You know, Fleiss defends his name in one of our earlier episodes, so I will not tolerate this slander.
I heard there were three letters to describe the substance that, you know, you might put together.
I think we asked him that, and he...
I think he laughed. I don't think
he laughed.
Yeah.
That's what
because,
he
you know, remember outside Barrington Hall on the street, those letters were written on Dwight or Haste or whatever that was. I'm pretty sure that was the legend. I didn't know for sure, but so quick little aside on the Daily Cal. And yeah, we were, so then when I was running it, we were so cocky because, you know, I had like Joe Lago and Vic Taffer and Chris Rea, like guys who were also good and on their way. And we used to read like the Daily Bruin, which we called the Daily Brutal or the Stanford Daily or the Daily Trojan. We used to read their stuff aloud in the newsroom and just laugh at how bad it was. And it was, but we were less bad than the average college staff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Daily Cal, when I was there with Danko, and like Ron Krawczyk came along,
Ron Krawczyk,
Bill Shaken, you know, was gone on to the LA Times.
Yeah.
There was just enough of a critical mass where it was kind of like, hey, just have fun with it.
Yeah.
Just have fun with it. Cause you guys aren't bad. You know, it was all guys at that time.
Marsha Duggar.
Right. Exactly. Who wrote some seriously interesting profiles.
For sure.
Of Grisham, for example. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. And then she would do like her hunk rankings or something of the water polo players and their speedos. She was having fun with it.
Better than guys doing it, right?
All right. There's one anecdote Natalie's been dying to ask you about.
I just love it when he sets me up for these questions. Two of the essays that I wanted to make sure that I read were Rio and Dante, Pedro's sons. And Dante's in particular, I really resonated with. No, I'm being serious. Stop laughing. I really resonated with it. I thought it was really sweet. I too feel like I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, I don't know what I want to do, what my place is in this world. I'm kind of freaking out over it. And he, in telling his story and telling, you know, like what his dad meant to him and how he has kind of set him up to succeed as an adult, he told this one story about being 11 years old,
<It's unbelievable. laughs>
playing baseball. And
Pedro's the coach.
And Steve, maybe you can take it from here.
Oh, wow.
The other team tries to do the hidden ball trick, right? I think.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I got it now.
Yeah. You've got all.
And so Pedro's one of, I think, two or three coaches, and he's trying not to big league everybody, but there's a question on the field. So Pedro instantly gets a major league umpire on the field. And it's this, I think it was a very young umpire.
Eighteen-year-old umpire is now talking on the phone on the field.
Just make sure I'm walking out with the phone. It's the equivalent of saying, like, I have the president on the phone. He would like to talk to you, you know?
Funny.
And yeah, Dante still shakes his head over that one.
Dude. I'm telling you this. I was like, you got to read the Dante one. And I hear him start cracking up. He's like, at least I've never done that. And I'm like, Dad, if I played football, you 100% would have done something like that.
Well, put it this way. Like, I would have, it's making me like, I probably should have had in one of your soccer games, like, Brandi Chastain or Julie Foudy call up, you know, hand the phone to the ref and explain the offside rule that they were getting wrong or something. You know,
I did have an unnamed NFL doctor,
former NFL doctor,
advise me when I was playing with a stress fracture, which turned into a fracture
in my foot.
And I, you know, I really wanted to play. And so I just, you know, had some of that advice.
We were in Las Vegas for a college showcase tournament, and it was a big deal for her club, and they were short on players, and Natalie was just trying to give them 5 minutes of rest here and there because they were down to 12, and she'd been, you know, trying to fight through what turned out to be a broken foot, but she was wrapping it, and I think I did call this. I was communicating with this former team doctor who was telling me how far I could push the Motrin Tylenol
combo,
among other things. And
it was great. And it worked to the point where I was totally playing fine on the stress fracture. But then I just, you know,
then you went foot on foot with a really large girl. But anyway,
the point is, there was a lot about Pedro and the stories that his kids were telling that reminded me of you, like always leaving from the road, making sure you're getting to our games.
Loud.
Loud.
You know,
super into it.
I mean, people person. I thought the story about him handing the phone to the umpire, I mean, in addition to cracking me up, but you know, I mean, he could get hot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I write in my introduction about when we were in Venice, Pedro and his wife and my wife, Sarah, and I were on a gondola ride, and he almost got into a fight with the gondolier. Just didn't like his attitude, you know? It was pretty hilarious because you're trying to have this romantic interlude, you know? But, you know, he would go Cuban, as he put it. It was just part of who he was. Yeah,
and did you, I think I've heard this maybe from you or maybe from someone else, maybe from Zagaris, but I think you wrote about him getting into political arguments with his relatives as they gestured wildly with their hands. And that sounded pretty intense too.
Yeah. I mean, especially after, so Pedro was born in Miami, but his mother was 8 months pregnant with him when they left Havana. Wow. Just imagine that. And then he was born in August 62. He and I were both born in August 62. So we were always the August 62 brothers. That's why there's 62 essays in the book.
Oh. You know.
And if you look on, like, right at the beginning, the brick, it shows that Pedro had, when they built the stadium in Phoenix, he had a brick put there, August 62 boys.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I have it here. And Dante or Rio mentioned that it's very much still on Pedro's desk, you know, in Phoenix.
That's awesome.
But yeah, but now I've completely lost my train of thought.
That Venice trip that we talked about, where he almost apparently, you know, threw a gondolier into the canal. It sounded like the two of you kind of like pulled something to get to Venice in the first place.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It was one of those things where there was like, he was in Europe. We really had to thread the needle on getting it organized. But I surprised Sarah anyway. That was my concept all along. Took her to the airport in Berlin. And didn't tell her anything I packed. And then it's like Venedig, which is, you know, German for Venice. And you know, there we were in Venice walking around and we had a great time. It was magical already. And then she runs into to Pedro in the hotel lobby. And I write about this where obviously Sarah is a very shrewd individual.
You
can't fool her on much. You know, it wasn't like she was just going to go along with it. But Pedro sold it so hard. You know, no, what are you doing here? He just wore her down. It was just so funny.
Yeah, that's the key. Never break character. Just
deny yeah. until you die.
Deny yeah.
until you well, die. We were. I remember what we were talking about before we shifted. It was the politics. And there's an excerpt in here. One of the essays is actually Pedro. What year was that from? It's a letter to Bill Clinton.
1999.
Yeah, right? Who was president at the time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Pedro was, you know, in Cuba when he was in the womb, and then he had never been to Cuba. And so he got a chance to go for that game between the Baltimore Orioles and the Cuban national team. And I got to be there with him. So it was amazing. I mean, we were playing stickball in the streets of Havana with kids. We were, you know, walking all over the place. And, when his parents had left, they'd always talked about the neighbors they had over where they lived and how they were big, you know, Castro supporters. And they just berated them for going to the imperialistic North and all that. This was the myth that Pedro was raised on. And then he went to the address. He had it. First of all, that guy recognized Pedro just because of the resemblance to his family.
Think about it.
From 1962 to 1999, you know. And then they had a great conversation. And Pedro was really moved by it. And let's just say I encouraged him to write that letter, that open letter to Bill Clinton, which was published in the Arizona Republic, calling for an end to the U.S. embargo, economic embargo. And that, back to your earlier point, you know, in Miami to do that was, I mean, you're going to get so many people mad at you and they're going to tell you about it. And I visited Miami with Pedro quite a few times in the, you know, the year or two after that. And I remember so many late nights, you know, you're getting your Cafe Cubano late at night and, you know, there's the arguments still raging and yeah, the hands chopping the air. And, but you know, that's what Pedro was raised on and he was very comfortable with that. And, you know, he gave as good as he ever got. So, but there was definite political consciousness there and he definitely changed. He moved. I don't have the details, but an interesting background story is two of the coolest people in baseball that I've known, Pedro and Dusty Baker, who also has an essay in the book. And it turns out those two didn't hit it off at first.
Really?
Dusty, you know, told me, you know, just talking, of course, there and on your podcast, but that Pedro, they got into talking about politics in Cuba and Pedro came off really strident. It put Dusty off a little bit. But the point is they got past it and, you know, we're super tight, totally dug each other. But those are the things you don't with politics, even before the last few years, you never know. You know, you talk honestly about politics and all of a sudden you can have crossed wires. So that was another thing where at ESPN, Pedro, of course, couldn't talk about politics. He couldn't do it on Twitter. But as the Begala essay in this book makes clear, he had a clear point of view. He wanted people to brand Trump as president one term from very early on. That was his idea for Begala.
I mean, I'm really glad that he at least got to see post-insurrection, the peaceful transfer of power. But man, and then Dusty, by the way, put $50 in the Dave Scheinen tip glass, which also comes out in the Scheinen essay. One thing that I really loved was, and they excerpted this in the Boston Globe, because Dan Shaughnessy, of course, is the great columnist there. But it seems that someone whose politics I'm not a huge fan of, nor I would suspect are you, and you would not like his politics, Curt Schilling, who is a longtime pitcher. Sounds like Pedro and Dan Shaughnessy were in the same club of Curt Schilling detests us, which I would love to be part of that club.
Yeah, that's right. Well, so we think of 9/11 and then the World Series that year and what a big deal it was, like when George W. Bush threw out the first pitch and all that. So there was just, I remember when one of those bombers flew over the Bob before game 7, it was all so intense, you know, and I was staying with Pedro. I was living in Berlin then, but I was in town staying with Pedro at his house. And in those years, he called me coach because, you know, I was like, when it came to writing, he considered me his coach.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And he was very serious about it. Coach, no. He wanted me to read his column for the next day and tell him what I thought. So I'm sitting there in his house, in his kitchen, reading this. And it's like my head is exploding. And Pedro and I write about this, had a mentor, both of us together, Ed Badix of the San Francisco Examiner, who Ray Ratto writes about. And I can tell you, Badix would not have favored running that column, not on the morning of game 7 of the World Series. To Ed, that would have seemed like it's about you, right? Mm. And I had some of that reaction, but the thing is, this wasn't Pedro's opinions. What had happened is Pedro had great sources, you know, some in Spanish, some in English, and knew exactly what had happened, which was that Schilling was trying to create a false impression that he was hurt to give himself an out. And he was throwing other people under the bus along the way. And Pedro was just outraged, wasn't going to stand for it. And so Sandy Gomez, Pedro's wife, and I were both telling him, we don't know, we don't know. But Pedro just, he went for it. And then the next day, it's out there. It was incredible, the reaction to it. Pedro's out on the infield beforehand. And one of the players comes over and shakes his hand for all to see. It was incredible vindication and validation.
That, and that, by the way, I'm heartened to see that's one of the rules that you listed, you know, show up the next day. Cause I stand by that, and it's definitely more old school, but yeah. It was always easy for the columnist who never showed up much to, you know, thrash and then not show up for a couple months, or the out of town person to come in and thrash. But even when it's national, I try to make a point of getting right back as quickly as I can to, you know, sometimes you're just taking your medicine. Sometimes it's a conversation. Sometimes you might get a handshake from someone else, and sometimes you might get your life threatened, but it's, you know, it's part of the job. And, you know, I love that about him, that was one of his rules.
It reminds me of the time Brent Gates, an A's infielder that people may not remember, he did hit 290 his rookie year, but he wanted to take my head off. He wanted to fight me because I had described him in the Chronicle as having an elfin features, elfin features. And he looked it up in a dictionary and it said fairy-like.
Which, it was a different era. That was, you know, definitely not gonna. Yeah, that's funny. I first of all, I'm thinking back at the Daily Cal because my standards were so skewed. Fleiss wrote a column where he called Doug Riesenberg the wimpiest 6'7" football player ever to walk the earth. And he was looking. I think Riesenberg was trying to kick his ass, and then I had this friend, John Holosek. He was a linebacker, middle linebacker for the Buffalo Bills, scrappy guy. And we were really good friends. We'd gone out a lot. We partied. I knew his wife. I knew his childhood friends. He's a good guy from Illinois. We were like buddies. Like, I'd come into town and we, you know, I'd stay. I don't know if I actually stayed at his house, but I'd like be at his house all weekend and then see him at the game. Well, I wrote a column about him taking a SI story where he had taken a pass in the flat to the house, like 57 yards, maybe, you know, 47 yards. And it was in late 2000. And I said, Holosek, who is slower than a manual recount, a reference to the 2000 election in Florida. And he stopped speaking to me. Like, it put a rift in our relationship for a couple of years. And I tried sending him he loved the Allman Brothers. I sent him like a box set of the Allman Brothers. He sent it back. I mean, it was brutal. And finally, I was covering the U.S. Golf Open in 2003, of all things, in Illinois, near Olympia Fields, near Chicago. And I hear this like laugh I recognize as I'm walking up, you know, one of the holes. And it was, you know, partying John Holosek with his buddies. And then we instantly made up and he went out with us that night. But yeah, dude, that was just from slow. I mean, elfin, that might have been, you know, I might have died.
But, you know, back to your idea, the Gomez rules. And I talked about this in Arizona when I gave a talk the week after Pedro died, part of the memorial. But that really was true, partly because of our mentor, Ed Badix, that Pedro and I tried to live by a kind of code. We had particular values and we spent a lot of time talking about it. We had the luxury of time because we were on the road together. There was one year where we went out every single night on the road together, but one. We missed one, you know?
Whoa.
And yeah. So, I mean, we had fun, of course. You know, we had a drink or two along the way, but we were mostly just talking the whole time, talking ball, talking people, talking writing, you know, going through it all. And so we went through all that and we called the website for the book, thegomezrules.com, and list the rules because, you know, it's a good record of a passionate guy's take on things. And it's nothing that surprising. A lot of it's basic old school values, but some of it was things like, you know, you're covering a game and you notice something. Well, first of all, watch and notice things, but then you notice something small that's kind of interesting. The third baseman did something kind of different. Go talk to that guy on a night when everyone else is talking to the, you know, guy that hit the home run or whatever. And that's how you build relationships. That idea of not viewing it as like transactional, that you need a quote, they're supposed to squeeze out a quote for you, but talking because you care, because you're interested. And it completely transforms the dynamic, and people tell you things when you're like that. So that to me is an amazing aspect of the Pedro legacy.
Yeah, it's funny. That's one of my bedrocks, that you have to, you know, you can't always be needing something and you can't always be coming at people. Sometimes when they're the most pressed and I'm not in a deadline situation, that's when I'll make a point of going up to someone and just saying, hey, it would be great to talk down the road. You know, they're so grateful that you're not coming at them then. But I just, you know, and then, you know, reading the essay from my friend Brian Murphy, I mean, he's talking about, you know, Brian's a young baseball reporter and he's covering the Yankees Red Sox ALCS, and he's just awed by Pedro, and, you know, Pedro's taking him out at night all night and then going in the next day, and the Yankees win. And as they're getting ready to go in the clubhouse, Pedro says to him, do you have any friends? Do you have a friend who just loves the Yankees? It really means something to him. And Brian did. He had this close friend who's getting married in a couple of weeks, who's a lifelong Yankee fan. And Pedro said, there's going to be champagne popping. He goes, you got to get some of the corks and just put them in your jacket and just get them in your jacket. And, you know, that to me, like, you know, it sounds hokey, but that's a person who understands the power of what we cover and the symbolism and the, you know, it really is a cool job when you can, you know, experience those moments in that way.
Yeah. And there's this thing where people don't quite believe it. They don't quite believe that you're connected to it all. I mean, in the book, we also have a picture of a woman who was just sitting in a bar, and Pedro like ran into her with, you know, groups of people, you know, and turned out she was a fan. He pulled out a cork and gave it to her, and she sent in a picture of the cork. So that essay, Always Grab the Corks, is one of my favorites, totally.
Unbelievable.
So when is the book coming out?
Well, the book came out July 13th, was the hardcover came out.
It's out.
I thought we were a special.
We are special.
That's awesome.
But that was a while ago. It's out.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's out.
Is it weird for you? Because, I mean, I imagine that, you know, he died so unexpectedly and suddenly, and it sounds like you immediately launched yourself into this project. How are you just processing everything with the book coming out and now no longer having to work on this?
You know, that is such a good, you know, insightful question, because it's totally true. And so many people asked if it was therapeutic, and yeah, right. It's like, you know, dumping salt water on a wound is, you know, therapeutic. I cried, probably cried a fair amount anyway, but then I'm sitting there and I get an essay like Always Grab the Corks or Shining or whatever. And then boom, it's another day, you know, and you just, you're playing hurt, you know, you fight through that. And then there's the energy of the project where, you know, you never know with books in general, but particularly with a book like this, you don't know if you're going to have 100 readers or 1,000 or whatever, but it's not about that. It's about trying to do it right, because that's what Pedro represents to me, and trying to seize the moment. So much of it is trying to just have the stamina of kind of going with it, you know, oh, Brad wants to be picture editor. Okay. So I'll work with Brad. Oh, we're not going to have 40 pictures. We're going to have 80. We're going to have we're going to have 185.
Cool.
Deal with all that, you know? And then we, in the end, very late, we changed printers so that we could have these double truck pictures. They call them end papers, but an incredible, you know, full page pictures on the inside covers in color. So you get a great picture of the whole Gomez family on bicycles in London. Exactly. And, you know, like when you talk about Dante and Rio, but then you also get to see great pictures of them. I think it makes such a difference. And one thing about the book too, is that And this was why it was challenging. It was trying to put so much life in there. It really wasn't about the baseball. And you know, like Rio Gomez's essay, which we touched on, but we didn't really talk about. I talked to Rio today, and he was explaining how for him, the books, you know, it's hard. It was kind of too intense for him. Kind of couldn't think about it, you know, and he kind of couldn't believe it till he saw it, you know. It's what he was telling me today. And, you know, I understood that you're holding the expectations of a lot of people close to me. I care about the Gomez family a lot, obviously. Yeah. But then when I take a step back, and to me, there's just so much beauty in there. And the story of Rio, who, you know, last night, do you know who it was? Sale pitched in a rehab start for the Portland Sea Dogs.
The guy who cut up his jersey when he threw a tantrum. I love that anyway.
And so they bring in a reliever to take over for the big league guy, and it's Rio Gomez. He's pitching in Double A for the Boston Red Sox right now. And he, when he was in high school in Arizona, got cut from his own senior team, his own varsity team. He got cut. He wasn't just not a star. They cut him.
Yeah.
And he didn't call his parents. I don't think he called anybody. He just got in his car, drove home, couldn't go in the house. He's just crying in there. Pedro somehow just knows he's out there, comes out, gets in the car. And Pedro, as I hope comes through loud and clear, Pedro loved to talk. The other, when Pedro was around, there were always a lot of words and usually pretty loud. And in this particular instance, Pedro was completely quiet. He sat there and listened. I mean, Rio says he didn't say a word for an hour, which is probably an exaggeration. But point is, he heard his son out. He was a listener. He let him cry it out. And by the end of that hour, they decided that they were going to be in this together, that Pedro was going to be behind him all the way. And you know what? It wasn't about any goal, X, Y, or Z. It was about, I don't think baseball's done with you. I think there's more to this story. So when Rio got called up this season after his dad's death to Double A, the thing that he talked about with me and with others was, whatever else is true, I made it this far in the game. That's something I'll always have, no matter what. Yeah. And I just think about, as a dad, I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old daughters, and you know, constantly about how to try to be there for them without being too there for them, you know? And that story to me is just so beautiful and completely transcends sports, obviously.
Yeah, I thought it was the heaviest thing. I mean, just having been a sports dad and understanding, you know, all those moments. And then, you know, so much of the book, I didn't know Pedro that well, but so much of it was familiar to me. Like, I could picture him telling that story, or yeah, I could picture him and Brian Murphy singing Cowboy Song by Thin Lizzy in the butt. Like, I can, you know, or Tim Q talking about the hands going out, you know, come on. Like, that's all very familiar, but that moment was so intimate and awesome. And it just, you know, we all want to sit here and say, every moment is precious. It can be taken from you anytime. I do feel like this is a person who did live life like that. Like, you know, we all have our moments. We get stressed out, but it feels to me like Pedro, more than anyone in our business, lived it knowing every moment is precious.
Yeah, he really did. And, you know, he died of sudden cardiac arrest at age 58. He and I were, of course, the same exact age. And boom, he was gone. But, you know, one thing you didn't hear much about with Pedro was regrets. I mean, you know, implicit. Like, he'd always wanted to do this. He'd always wanted to do that. You know, he and Sandy, you know, they'd be out on bike rides, and, you know, they did all kinds of great things. And, you know, he traveled so much that he missed things as a dad, but he was as devoted dad at the same time. And both his sons have stories. And Dante Gomez, in his essay, talked right at the end about how Pedro always tried. He always thought about other people, and he really never had a bad day. He was always, you know, and it is kind of amazing, as a guy who has plenty of bad days, you know.
Yeah.
On a good day, you know, I can hang with that example, but I can't do that every day, yeah. You know. So in some ways, it's a little daunting if you want to set up Pedro as a role model. But in another way, it's just about being who you are. I mean, Remember Who You Are is the title. And I'll just mention where that came from. Rob King is up at ESPN. His dad's a print journalist, famous guy. And I was driving to Arizona. We stopped in Palm Springs. I called Rob, who I'd never met, never spoken to, but we were like friends in Pedro. And we were like both crying. And it was, you know, 6 days later, 5 days later. And we're having this very heavy, just real conversation, kind of raw. And, you know, he's a very courteous fellow, but he interrupted me just, I mean, stone cold, right in the middle of what I was saying, because he was so excited. He's like, wait, I just remembered something important. And he had forgotten that this sign he had on the wall of his office in Bristol, which people see every day, you know, non-COVID times, remember who you are, that those words came from Pedro on Rob's first day at ESPN. Actually, I think it was Rachel Nichols, and Pedro kind of pulled him aside. And then Rob was talking to him and saying, you know, it's great here, but you can also get lost, and kind of going on. And then he said, remember who you are. And Rob telling me that then was very emotional. And he was going to do an essay for us. And then at that point we said, well, that's the title to your essay. And I texted him an hour later. I'm like, dude, I think that's got to be the title to the book. And he was so cool, because he's like, thank you. Thank you. I'm so amazed that you would even consider that you would even think of that. So that kind of thing where it's just about people trying to reach down a little bit, give a little bit more. I think that that's something that we can all relate to, and that we can all keep it at hand as a kind of example.
Yeah. Well, you nailed it, dude. I mean, you know, you've painted a very full picture of an awesome person. And I hope everybody gets a chance to buy it and read it and and know that it's real. Where you said there's a website. Tell us the best ways to get a hold of this.
Well, you know, it's there. Your independent bookstore can order it. Barnes & Noble, strangely, was a little slow to get it in stock. So online ordering might be the best right now. But it's nationally distributed by Ingram. So anybody should be able to order it. I always encourage people to go to their local independent and order it there. Support your local independent.
For sure. Great call. And we really appreciate it. And we will have you back soon, hopefully with a book that you didn't have to write in rapid fire fashion.
I think you should title it Florja.
Florja. Absolutely. Edited by Mike Fleiss.
No.